Hello, good evening. You're listening to the Kill Radio Tuesday News with John and Maria. Iraq body count for today. And we know what day today is? Today, May 9th, 2006, from IraqBodyCount.net. Minimum civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, 35,101. Maximum, 39,258.
Hail to the scumbag, the motherfucking president.
So here we are at the Kill Radio Tuesday News. Maria, hello.
Hello.
Did you bring some news for me today?
Yeah, just a couple things. Just wanted to remind people if you like surfing the internet, if you believe in freedom of speech, you might want to log into savetheinternet.com because Congress, representatives in Congress are voting on the Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Bill, also known as the COPE Bill, this week. This bill will permit phone and cable companies to operate the internet without government oversight. It will end net neutrality, which is a term which refers to free access to the internet. And a lot of people may not know this, but many homeless people and poor people communicate via the internet as libraries offer internet access for free.
So this bill would make it illegal for people to just go into a library and check email and
not illegal. It's just that it will enable service providers to charge a fee for almost every transaction. So whenever
like
you
every email.
Yeah, every email you send or receive, if you set up a website. It can also limit who runs the internet. Who authorizes you to start your own website on the internet as well. And it also influences public access. It will replace local cable companies with national franchises. So all those public access shows that anyone can just produce might disappear or be very limited. So
turn into the fast food restaurants of television.
Exactly. So if logging into savetheinternet.com, it may not be too late to express mm-hmm. your opinion.
I'm looking at the website. Looking at the website right now, it's got loads of information. If you click on the FAQ, you can get the answers to what savetheinternet.com is all about, definition of network neutrality, and what's actually happening in Congress. So, yeah, everyone should check that out, savetheinternet.com.
It's very important for freedom of speech. And one other news point, I got this from the Tom Hartman Show, and he got it from alternet.org. The United States is now the third most unequal industrialized society following Russia and Mexico. That means we have a huge gap between the rich and the poor in this country right now. In the year 2004, saw a dramatic increase in the number of billionaires in this country. Since 2001, when our economy hit rock bottom, actually we had the worst economic crash since the Great Depression back in 2001 and 2002, although the media did not report it. The mainstream media. Kill Radio might have, but the mainstream media did not. And the ranks of the poor hit about 4 million. The number of people without health insurance, over 45 million. The average CEO now earns 431 times that of the average worker. Since the early 80s, the Reagan era, the growth in billionaires has leapt dramatically, but Congress is focusing now on repealing the federal estate tax paid only by multimillionaires, and more interested in that than reinforcing the levies along the Gulf Coast. And, of course, hurricane season will be approaching again.
the estate tax, that's what they call the death tax, right? Isn't that the same?
Yeah, I think so.
They don't refer to it as the estate tax because right. That's too realistic. That's too much what it is. By calling it the death tax, they make it sound unnecessary
and
cruel.
Yeah, so those poor wealthy billionaires.
Those poor wealthy millionaires.
And the government's also considering cutting Medicaid and food stamps, and yet they want to reduce capital gains and dividends taxes to help the rich.
So it's trickle-up economics.
Exactly.
Very exciting.
So, yes.
You didn't bring any good news by any chance, did you? Oh, well, actually,
we brought some good news
right here, right now. We have a guest. We have three guests, actually, an organization formerly known as Divas for Democracy. Joy, Joe, and Dan are here to talk about how people can get involved and how California can help impeach the president. And we're also joined by my incredibly squeaky chair. Thanks for coming into killradio.org. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
I'm Joy Swan, and I'm one of the co-founders of the Progressive Caucus, the California Democratic Party, and we are working statewide right now on this impeachment issue and more of what we're going to talk about today.
I'm Joe Olson. I'm the Southern California co-chair of the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party, and ditto all of the above in addition to single-payer health care and poverty eradication.
I'm Dan Licht, and I'm just a member of the Progressive Caucus. I'm the minority coffee getter.
Yes. Is that your default position as the male in the organization?
I guess so.
You just don't know our definition of coffee, that's all.
Oh, I see. Well, you guys had a big weekend recently. You were in Sacramento, yes?
Yes.
And what were you doing up there?
Democratic Party holds a statewide convention, and it's a convention of the all of the delegates from around California. So you may or may not know that there are 80 assembly districts in California. It's divided geographically. And each of those assembly districts elects, through a democratic process, 12 people that represent that assembly district. And there are also people that represent the districts that are appointed by some of the elected officials in the assembly as well. So in total, about 3,000 people make up the Democratic State Central Committee, or the DSCC, and they come together every year at a convention that alternates in Northern California and Southern California. And also I should add that each year they alternate, it being a platform convention, i.e. an opportunity to...
Our ride's here.
A shout out to the healthcare system in America.
Yes, you said the magic words. They've come for you. They send fire trucks. Yeah, they're out of police cars.
So they alternate years, and the focus of one year is reforming the platform that the state will rest on and hopefully enact and work toward. And the next year is a resolution year where issues and ideas that come out of the committee are heard and approved. So this year was a platform year.
And what was the major topic for this year? What was on people's minds?
Actually, there was quite a bit going on. When the Progressive Caucus, this time last year, was our very first pre-approval meeting at the convention here in Los Angeles last year. And so in that time this year, we, in the last month or so, have really made a push to get some progressive items included into this year's platform and into the Democratic Party, the California Democratic Party platform. So we were going for, you know, sort of a whole bunch of, you know, crazy things like single-payer health care. And,
insanity.
You know, well, this is left-wing nut jobs that we are. Impeachment was one of the things we were trying to get put into the platform. The immediate withdrawal of the troops from Iraq.
Poverty.
Tax cuts for terrorists.
You know.
Things like that.
Yeah, big statues, actually. Yeah. So those were the four things that the Progressive Caucus and the progressives around the state were really pushing to get put into the platform, as opposed to, you know, that we value freedom and democracy and, you know...
Sound bites, in other words.
Right. Just esoteric words that have no tangible tie to any action in reality. So we had been kind of lobbying behind the scenes with the platform committee, and Joe was actually a member on that committee, so she knows more of the behind the scenes that really went on. But leading up to the convention, it didn't appear that we were going to get much of what we wanted. They didn't want to put the word single payer in the platform. They did not want to put the word immediate into a withdrawal from Iraq, and they did not want to put impeachment anywhere within a 10-foot pole of the platform. And they did not want to give poverty its own plank or recognition within the platform. So
there's probably not a simple answer to this question, but why do you think that is? Why would the Democratic Party, supposedly the party of opposition, feel that way?
It's interesting. I don't necessarily think that the Democratic Party views itself as the party of opposition, which may be part of the problem. Democratic Party views itself as the party of inclusiveness. And unfortunately, in the effort to make everybody happy, they end up making nobody happy. And so I it was a just to give you a little background on the platform committee is chosen, is actually appointed by the chair, Art Torres, of the Democratic Party. So people put in their request to be on the platform committee, and they go through a little letter writing process, and then they kind of get chosen or not chosen. I'm not sure how many people get not chosen, but anyway. So
well, there are known unknowns.
That's
and then
right,
there are
exactly.
Unknowables.
So the job of the platform committee is to put together a consensus paper, or as we started affectionately calling it, you know, the lowest common aspiration. and so the job of the platform, really, the platform committee, is to choose things that basically all Democrats can agree on, which, as you know, is a very, very wide range of things. As I said last time I was on the show, the Democratic Party, except for all the people who've been disenfranchised by the Democratic Party, are pretty much everyone who's not an asshole. And so... that being the case for the party, it has a wide range that varies from very conservative Democrats mm-hmm. who don't necessarily agree that immediate withdrawal is the way to go to people like ourselves who believe we should have been out, never been in.
Right.
So it is the job of the platform to kind of glean consensus. But the exciting part was to be able to go in there and educate people about why it is – for example, the most startling thing is actually poverty. Poverty elimination should be the cornerstone of the Democratic platform. And
especially considering what we were listening to at the beginning of the show, when Mary was talking about.
Exactly, exactly. And so the fact that you, on the one hand, it's very sad that you have to go in and educate the Democratic Party about why poverty elimination is important. But on the other hand, it's exciting to know that you can go in and educate the platform committee about why poverty should be its own plank and why it should be included in the platform. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there.
How uninformed are they?
who are you defining as they, for starters?
The Democratic Party, I guess. I mean, these people that you're trying to educate, is it that they really don't know, or is it that they don't want to know and they'll finally listen when you tell them?
Well, in the first place, the Democratic Party is us. It's not – there's not really a them. Everyone should just keep in mind, if you get involved in the Democratic Party, you are part of the Democratic Party. That's what we did. But it's not so much a question of trying to convince certain people. It's a question of what people see the platform as being. Like, there's one view of the platform is that it's a moral compass that everyone can line up to follow. And there's another view that it's sort of like, well, let's see whichever way everybody's going, and then that'll be our platform. So it's a question of whether you're trying to lead with the platform or see the platform as like taking a temperature of a patient.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what it feels like sometimes. I don't know. Did I answer your question? Or?
Yeah.
So there is no they because it's really – it's just a lot of people trying to get reelected, the Democratic Party is, and then it's a lot of opinions. And
but as members of the Progressive Caucus, are you without saying that there's a they, do you guys as individuals or as a small group within the Democratic Party come up against a kind of – you know, interference or friction because of what you stand for.
Well, oh, absolutely. We're trying to herd cats, though. So, but here, I'll pass it on to someone else here.
Yeah, I just actually want to say that we're the largest caucus, actually, in the party now, which is exciting.
Oh, is that so?
And I think really, really speaks to that issue of that progressives need to become the party. There's certainly resistance, just as if this were a show with conservative Democrats, the same questions would be asked. Do you get resistance to the fact that you want to stay in Iraq and, you know, mm-hmm. stay the course? And they'd say, of course, there's these people, the Progressive Caucus, who really want to get out now. But I'll tell you another interesting example was single payer. Single payer is a very, very important issue for Californians and the country, actually. Speaking of things that we're ranked really, really poorly in the industrialized world, we're actually ranked 37th in the industrialized world for healthcare, overall healthcare system performance. So,
wow.
And 73rd in fairness, which is just appalling. But it's a very little, it's a poorly understood concept, single payer. People mistake it for socialized health care. And so they have a lot of preconceived notions about what that means or doesn't mean.
Can you break it down for our listeners in a sort of simplistic terms?
Oh, sure. I'll come back and do a whole show on single payer. But recently, Sheila Kuehl, who's one of the state senators out here, introduced a bill, SB 840, that was essentially this single-payer idea, that monies that are already coming into the state and monies that would be contributed by businesses and individuals' percentage of their income would go into one single pot and be distributed from there, as opposed to what we have now, which is over 150 different organizations that act as middlemen for doling out payments. You can imagine, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to understand that when you have 150 different middlemen and 85 different pieces of paper, it's you have a huge administrative burden. So 25 to 30 cents on every dollar is spent on administration instead of healthcare delivery. Mm. Now, if you contrast that to the federally funded and state funded programs like Medicare and Medi-Cal, there's about a 2 to 3% overhead in administrative costs. So it's extremely efficient, which is the same thing you see with Social Security. So the problem is, however, that people can't wrap their head around the idea of taking healthcare and well-being out of an economic system. In this country, what we have is it's based on the bottom line. So the people that there's actually people profiting from your misfortune or your bad health. If you think about that as a concept, it's a barbaric concept, but yet we say okay to that because we're so market driven in this country.
Right.
It's okay. And what I tell people who are really attached to capitalism is it's absolutely okay to remain a capitalist economic system and take certain pieces out and subject them to a different kind of system that's more effective. And frankly, poses less of a public health risk to us. So with single payer, a lot of people believe, oh, it's going to be socialized healthcare and you're not going to get what you need and you're going to have to wait a year. And they always have the one story of the person in the UK who had to wait for their heart transplant and died waiting. Okay, well, that's ridiculous because the one thing we are number one in the world is dollars spent per capita on healthcare, which is $6,000 a person per year, which is a ginormous amount of money, you can imagine. So the reason that so much money is spent is because there's actually a lot of medical providers in America. There's just a whole different kind of resource system here than there is, say, in the UK or in Canada, which is where people commonly quote from. So Sheila Kuehl designed this bill to basically introduce the idea of single payer in California so that by expanding the risk pool to every single Californian, you then lower the cost per person of healthcare, and all this money goes into a single payer pot, and the money is distributed to the same providers that are there now. They just don't go through a middleman. And it actually ends up the state would save. There was an independent group that did a financial analysis of this and came up with that the state would save $5 billion the first year. Just the first year.
But who would lose money then in this scenario?
Well, the people who would lose money would obviously be the middlemen, these HMOs who are now making record profits on people's poor state of health. And also, of course, stockholders, people who are making stock profits from these companies as well. And so, you know, it's a paradigm issue of is the bottom line people's well-being or is the bottom line profit? And that's what we have to ask. So that was a very interesting thing on the platform. We're going to take this back to the platform, which is the people on the platform committee who were testifying against using single-payer language had clearly gone to some anti-single-payer propaganda websites and were quoting them. This one lady said, I'm not going to wait, 2 years for a corneal transplant if I need that. And I thought, okay, so if you get it in time, it's okay. And this is another common thing. People don't recognize that we have financial rationing right now in the U.S., and in California.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people who, at least I think I know a lot of people who haven't gotten what they need here.
Absolutely.
You know, that they had to wait for this, that, or the other thing, or they get
But it's okay because they're poor. So
right, or they get misdiagnosed, or the doctor prescribes them one thing, and then the insurance company says, well, why don't you consider giving them this thing instead, because it's, we'll give you more money if you do.
There was one of the arguments going on, or discussions going on during the platform. We were talking about single payer, and this one woman that Joe is referring to talking about having to wait, 2 years to get your checkup or whatever horror she was trying to relay to us. And, and 2 years for a corneal transplant. Well, the comment number one is, yeah, you wait 2 years if you have insurance.
Right.
If you don't have insurance, you wait indefinitely.
You wait until you die.
Yeah, well, you just wait.
Yeah.
You just go to hell and wait. And then the thing, though, that came up in this was, this discussion of the whole misnomer about that we want to turn this into a socialized medicine and, people's prejudice against just that term as opposed to its reality. And so one of the things we were saying is, you can talk about the problems they have in Canada with their medical care. You can talk about the problems they have in England or France or wherever. But, you know, I don't notice anybody in Canada sitting around having forums to discuss changing to America's healthcare system. You know, it's like as bad as things are, you know, quote unquote, nobody's trying to turn into, you know, America with their healthcare system.
Yeah, I heard a guy on a radio show was talking about how one of the major differences between the way Americans relate to their insurance and people abroad do is that here there are a lot of people working at jobs that they hate, that they're making them miserable, that are destructive, that they're no good at, but they can't leave because if they leave, they won't have any health insurance, and there's no reasonable, affordable way for them to get health insurance except to stay at that job that they may not even, you know, that they don't belong in. So there's a lot of, the point of that particular interview had to do with the fact that there's a lot of extra mental illness going around as a result.
Well, and the reality is, too, that more people are missing work days because mm-hmm. they do need stress days, or they have what a lot of people don't understand is the concept of underinsured folks who have insurance that partially sort of covers, like your example of, you know, you really need this drug, but the insurance company doesn't want to cover it, so you're asked to do something else. This happens to me every single day that I practice, is I get a call, well, we don't cover this, can you put the patient on this? And no, I can't put the patient on this. They've been on this. It doesn't work for them.
What do you do?
I'm a physician. Oh. And so I go through this ridiculous rigmarole where now a half an hour, an hour of my time is now spent making this argument to a pharmacy about why a patient needs it. And truthfully, they don't end up getting it, even after that argument.
We should mention that Joe is a medical doctor.
Oh, yeah, I'm a medical doctor. And I actually do a lot of my care in HIV, youth with HIV, which is a hugely underinsured and uninsured population, especially in California.
Well, one of the arguments you don't hear a lot, people who are arguing against single payer healthcare and things like that, people seem to forget that if you don't get good healthcare, you're more likely to miss more work, which is bad for the economy. People think that the system we have now is somehow good for the economy because it discourages people from taking days off of work or something like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I don't know if anyone has studied anything by Jared Diamond, you know, the collapse and all that.
Guns, Germs, and Steel, right?
One of the main things that he said is the reason that certain countries have trouble developing is because of illness, because of lack of health care. So the health care, having healthy populations makes the population more productive.
And even if the government has to help pay for that, they end up saving money by increased productivity.
Exactly.
In the long run.
It's exactly the argument that Reagan was making about trickle-down.
Except he was wrong.
Well, except he was wrong, right? He was saying, well, let's lower the taxes. But this is a different argument. You say, let's make everybody healthy. Then we'll have more people paying taxes.
And also, it's really important also to understand that the government won't be paying more with single payer. This is another misconception. People say there's no way we could afford this in California. But the reality is that the way the Lewin Group analyzed this, and we have yet to see the financial piece of the bill, by the way, that goes along with SB 840. But the way that this was analyzed is that the payment structure would essentially be all the monies that are coming in currently, so there's going to be no increase in funding that's currently coming from either the state or the federal government. And then individuals, rather than paying, say, a copay or a premium, they'd pay about a 3% of their income, and employers would pay another percentage of what they would pay their salaries to their employees. So the money is not coming. This is not, let's have the government pay for everyone's health insurance. This is, let's cut down on, we can bulk buy now. So we're going to save millions of dollars. California as a state can now bulk negotiate with drug companies. Let's lower the risk of the whole population, because once you include the whole population in the risk pool, there's a healthier population overall. So you're not just insuring a smaller segment of the population. You're insuring everybody, which is a lot of healthy people who are still putting money into the system. So the reality is that this is not something that's going to cost the federal government more money at all in any way. I really want to stress that, because that's a common misconception. That's the first thing people say, there's no way we can afford it.
Hmm. You guys brought some audio of this panel. Yes?
We should probably introduce the panel. This is what you have a tape of is not the platform committee, though that would be a good idea. But to end on the platform, because I think there was some important stuff before we get into impeachment, is in the end, it was an amazing education in behind-the-scene politics, because it was kind of like the 2 o'clock in the morning phone call, you know, with everything going on in the platform committee, with us saying, no, that's not acceptable to the progressives in the party, that you don't put in single payer. It's not acceptable to us that you don't say we want out of Iraq now, and it's not acceptable to us that you will not put impeachment into our platform. And
did they come to you with, like, you know, how do you feel about the word soon?
Absolutely. That's really? Exactly what they came with. Well, would you take sooner? You know, in fact, they said, as soon as safely possible. And I said, you know what? That would be George Bush would accept that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as soon as safely possible is nothing.
And
it
then,
means
yeah,
nothing.
We would never be safe.
So we actually got a scribbled piece of paper the morning of the vote of the platform. And in the interim of all this, so there's the platform committee meeting. We actually got the word now. Withdraw the troops from Iraq now, as opposed to immediately. So we caved in with the word now. So we got what we consider the immediate withdrawal of the troops into the platform.
What is the larger significance of that? Like, who then sees this?
Not a damn
the word
person.
Now. Oh, come on, somebody. You guys worked so hard for it. I mean,
well, you know, that's part of the problem with what we view as the whole Democratic Party is, A, that, you know, the platform just gets passed and then sits in some dusty archive somewhere.
So you want a battle in a war that isn't actually taking place.
Exactly. And then so one of our, you know, crusades now is to hold legislators accountable to the Democratic platform. In other words, that the platform should be something that now directs our actions and that we should be accountable to that. So we got the word now in. We got acceptable poverty language in, and they wouldn't budge on impeachment, and then they didn't want to put single payer. So in the interim between the meeting and the actual vote on the platform, we were engaging in a way to bypass the committee's decisions, and that is through collecting signatures of delegates. And if you collect 300 signatures of Democratic delegates, then you can pull an item from the platform and pull the platform and have it voted, a hand vote, on the convention floor. So we were gathering those signatures, and they knew that we had the signatures to pull the items. So we get a scribbled piece of paper the morning of, right? Was it the morning of? Seriously, a scribbled piece of paper that says, would you accept that, you know, the California Democratic Party believes that health care for all is a right and that we should transition to a single-payer health care system? And so we caved again into that. And, you know, again, we got the word single-payer health care in there and that we are, you know, that the party wants to transition to that system. The final thing was the whole impeachment thing, and that's what we were putting on this impeachment forum at the convention on Saturday night. And they didn't want to get in the platform, but about 2 days before the convention, they told us, you know, well, you know, we've got a big surprise for you, and you're gonna be really happy about it. And we're like, yeah, right, okay, you know, when the doors are locked when we get there, you'll be so surprised. little snipers. Kenny's dead. So, you know, we're saying great, wonderful, good, but meanwhile we're collecting our signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, we found out somewhere along the line, but the morning of the actual opening of the convention, 9 a.m., the opening statement was a proclamation put out by Art Torres, and that was voted on by consensus of the body whether or not we would approve this proclamation, and it was a proclamation of impeachment. And Joe, you have that, right?
I do.
Woohoo. So this is actually, and interestingly, it's almost verbatim, the first half of this is the language that we had submitted to put into the platform.
So it really was a pleasant surprise then.
So this was what the first vice chair, actually Art Torres, was out. He was recovering from a medical surgery, but The first vice chair of the California Democratic Party read, the California Democratic Party calls for the immediate investigation of the President and Vice President of the United States for committing the following alleged acts. One, misleading Congress and the American public about an unproven and unrealized threat to national security by Iraq in order to justify war, thereby violating the federal anti-conspiracy statute and the False Statement Accountability Act. Two, ordering the National Security Agency to conduct electronic surveillance of American citizens without seeking warrants from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court of Review as required by law. 3. Violating the Federal Torture Act, Title 18, United States Code, Section 113C, and the UN Torture Convention and the Geneva Convention, which are U.S. law under Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution. 4. Ordering indefinite detention of accused persons without access to legal counsel, without charge, and without the opportunity to appear before a civil judicial officer to challenge the detention, all in violation of U.S. law and the Bill of Rights. Sufficient questions have been raised in public discourse, in the press, and on the floor of Congress to warrant an investigation of these and other alleged crimes, misdemeanors, and acts of misfeasance and malfeasance, and to merit an investigation into the propriety of impeachment.
And it was adopted unanimously on the floor of the convention. So
now the only problem is getting the Democratic Party to actually follow the platform.
Well, let me just I'm sorry, Dan. I just want to point out that it's easier to set up a dynamic that's a we versus they than it is to actually understand that one of the dynamics of politics is the constituency giving permission to the electeds to go certain ways. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's so powerful about the Democratic State Central Committee is, I think we talked about this last time, about how many grassroots activists got onto the committee last year. But it's a very powerful moment to have, in this case, I think there were 1,600 certified people who actually had been credentialed of the 3,000 that were on the floor chanting, impeach, impeach, impeach. It's a really powerful thing that says, we want you to do this. It's okay. Take heart. Take courage. Because this is the people saying this. And there's different pathways to things being achieved in this country. And one of them is via the people. And that's what was really exciting about it.
I was just going to say that you know, the platform is, it really is more than just a piece of paper that's stuck in a dusty. It's about ideas. And I don't know, I remember I had a philosophy teacher once that said, you know, people say, what's the use of philosophy? And, you know, the first thing he says, well, what's the practical application of philosophy? And he says, well, Karl Marx was a philosopher. So it's about getting the ideas there that the people can follow. It's sort of the actions will follow the ideas. If you don't have the ideas, you don't know where to go. So I think it's really important, actually, the platform. I think you guys did a great job.
Some of this is, if I understand, it's inspired by events that occurred in the state of Illinois, I think. If you could elaborate on that, about the loophole where state can
actually,
trigger impeachment.
Actually, this has been behind the scenes going on for months now through impeachbush.tv. It's an amazing website, and I really, really can't push them enough for anybody listening out there that wants to help us bring impeachment. No matter what state you live in, they've got it all laid out for you, talking points, you know, step one, step two, step three. But it didn't really come from Illinois. Illinois was just the first one to get somebody to stand up and do it. So what it is it's based on a precedent in the Jefferson Manual, that Thomas Jefferson added to the Constitution. And in one section it talks about,
Resolution 603. Sort of like how to use the Constitution?
Well, it just says, you know, there are multiple ways to bring impeachment. And it lists them, and one of them is through not only a state legislature, but any publicly elected body. Can bring. So the Los Angeles City Council, should they desire, could vote for impeachment, a resolution of impeachment, and forward that to the U.S. House of Representatives, to the U.S. Congress, and force the issue that way. But so what it is it's only been used once or twice in the U.S. history, and there's what we call the precedent case in 1903, which was the state of Florida versus Swain. And Swain was a federal judge, and they utilized a section of the Jefferson Manual to bring charges against this federal judge. And ultimately, Congress took up that impeachment charge, the impeachment charge there, and he was removed from office. He was impeached. So that is really the only time it's been used in our history. It's already historical that three states have legislators that have introduced impeachment charges into the state legislature. It is the first time in history that this has ever happened. And now we have three states already on board. We have a few more states sort of coming up in the wings. But it's
on top of
telltale.
This on top of the 32% approval rating. So he's doing
a
great job.
Add, it's really important for people to understand that there are state legislators in three states who have brought these resolutions. That does not mean that they're passed in those states. Mm. What has to happen is the state legislature has to pass it by 50% plus one and does not need approval by the governor, and then it gets kicked up to the House.
And where is California in this?
Well, we'll talk about that in 1 second.
Yeah, I was just going to throw in, instead of waiting to the end to talk about what you can do, since we're talking about this now, anyone in the state of California, Illinois, and Vermont, you should contact your assembly person and get them to support whatever resolutions have been for impeachment. And if you're in any of the other states, you should go to the site, and what was that again?
ImpeachBush.tv.
ImpeachBush.tv and start organizing something in your state. You'd be surprised how this can take off like wildfire.
Yeah, in fact, if you go on, you can go to afterdowningstreet.org, you can go to democrats.com, ImpeachBush.tv.
Hello?
Yeah, we're good.
And all of those sites will direct you. And believe me, so much of the legwork has already been done for people. So let's talk specifically about California, because that's where we know what's going on, and that's what is one of our priorities right now is bringing that to a vote before the recess on July 11th or July 7th in the state assembly. So Paul Koretz, the assemblyman for the 42nd Assembly District, who happens to be all of our assemblymen, which is just so awesome. He amended a resolution, AJR 39, that he already had talking about calling for a ban of depleted uranium. And he took this and he pretty much gutted it and put in this impeachment resolution. And it's actually a very scathing resolution. I mean, it goes through probably at least six different impeachable offenses.
It includes Cheney.
It includes Cheney,
so it's more detailed than what you were reading before.
Right.
Yeah.
And the great thing to know, though, is that both of these, the proclamation made by the California State Democratic Party and Paul Koretz's resolution, both include both the president and vice president in their impeachment charges. So this AJR 39 has to now be brought to a vote. It has to be voted on by August 31st as an absolute dead deadline, or it just gets pretty much killed because of the recess of the legislature. So right now we're working to bring that vote before the July 7th recess. And in time with this, it just so happens that the Progressive Caucus was sponsoring this impeachment forum at the state convention. And in Paul's resolution came out literally days before the impeachment forum. And so we quickly added him to it and made that a big part of this impeachment forum that we put on. So the impeachment forum was held at the Crest Theater in Sacramento. It seats about just under 1,000 people. And, you know, again, we didn't know, you know, we don't know what we're doing. We're just winging it. We're, you know, a year ago, I was my mom and my kids, baseball coach and, working every day and stuff like that.
Now you're changing the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Much to my children's chagrin. So we put together this impeachment forum. We had Congresswoman Maxine Waters on the panel. We had Elizabeth de la Vega, who is the former lead prosecutor for the city of San Jose, who is also writing a book on impeachment. Bob Furtick, who is the one of the co-founders of AfterDowningStreet.org and the president of Democrats.com, and Shanna Cotadal, who is one of the lawyers at the Center for Constitutional Rights, the same place that Michael Ratner works from. And then we had also Paul Koretz. And Mike Malloy of Air America Radio moderated the event. And lo and behold, it was, I'd have to say very modestly, the hot ticket of the convention. We sold out all seats. We had people sitting in the aisles. And it was truly incredible. It was, I think it gave a lot of people hope. And boy, was it a rowdy crowd. So these weren't people sitting back, you know, just coming to listen and clap politely. This was some people that, you know, had a lot of energy and were looking for something to do. And so that was one of our goals, was, you know, not to just discuss it, but to have everybody leave with some action items as well. So that's the CD that you have of that forum.
Before we play, let me ask, was this perhaps the first time or one of the first times that you got a sense that maybe this could actually happen, that we could impeach this president?
Absolutely. I mean, you sit around your kitchen table talking about it as a pipe dream, and the really exciting...
A pipe bomb? What?
Oh, my gosh. There's the NSA. Here they are. So I think the most exciting part about the forum to me was we drew in a combination of people that came from the Democratic Convention and people that were in the community and drove quite a ways to come into the forum. And what was really exciting about it is it was largely a crowd of people who I can imagine a lot of the Kill Radio listeners are people who don't really feel there's a voice for them in the Democratic Party. That it's very much, there's a lot of people who very much feel and have a lot of evidence for the Democratic Party being a corporate light party, that it's just as entrenched and it's even more insidious because it's wearing a different coat. Mm-hmm. And I think it was really exciting to be able to stand there and say, there's a voice for you. There's a place for you. And there are people within the party who are strongly fighting for this voice and for these ideas. And so please don't be disenfranchised. Come back into the party and help us transform it. And that was really exciting. That was one of the things that I hope that people take away from and that resonated with people.
And we hope that people listening now get that same message.
Well, why don't we go ahead and play some of this CD? Do we know what I'm about to play?
We're just going to go right into the panel, and Mike Malloy started out by listing three of the most egregious impeachment, which were
the NSA wiretapping and the detention without charge and torture of prisoners of war, and the war itself, misleading and lying to bring us to war.
So then his first question is, which of these do you think is the most prosecutable?
Yeah, and are there others?
And are there others that weren't mentioned?
I'd like to add leading while intoxicated.
Well, you'll get some of that.
You're here.
There are at least three main allegations levied against the Bush administration. The first allegation is that the Bush administration, beginning in 2002, sidestep the FISA Corps in order to engage in widespread electronic surveillance of Americans and foreigners without warrants from any court, including FISA magistrates. The FISA Court was established in 1978 following the Nixon Watergate scandal of warrantless spying on American citizens. In December 2005, George W. Bush admitted the existence of such a program, but counter-argued that this type of surveillance was included in the congressional sanction afforded the president to fight the so-called war on terror. Last week on 60 Minutes, the former chief of the CIA's Europe Division, Tyler Drumheller, revealed that in the fall of 2002, President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice and others were told by CIA Director George Tenet that Iraq's foreign minister had reported that Iraq had no active weapons of mass destruction program. There has been quite a bit of testimony from reliable witnesses that George W. Bush justified the war in Iraq by producing false and misleading statements designed to deceive the people of the United States of America as well as Congress into the pursuing of the occupation of Iraq. On April 5th, 2006, Amnesty International published a report confirming the U.S. practice of rendition, secretly sending prisoners of war to other countries and to Guantanamo for the purpose of torturing them and for the purpose of bypassing judicial process. President Bush has been accused of allowing his administration to condone and practice interrogation through torture, failing to investigate and prosecute high-level officials responsible for torture, and refusing to accept the binding nature of a statutory ban on cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment of war prisoners. These are the most common allegations levied against Bush. Do you think that each of these is in fact an impeachable offense? Are there other offenses not mentioned in the foregoing allegations? And let's begin with Elizabeth.
Yes, Mike. I think each of them is grounds for impeachment. And to choose one or the other, it's kind of like deciding to choose between which is better, cancer or leprosy or heart attack. They are all horrendous. And each one of them is pretty much flat out easily provable as a federal crime. And there are many other crimes that have been committed by the Bush administration. But I'll let other panelists answer your first question. We'd be here all night if I went on with it.
As you will, just jump in. Folks, you all have live microphones. The question, if you want to hear the question again, if you want to comment on this, do you believe that these, each or all of these, are in fact impeachable offenses, and are there any other offenses mentioned that you think should be included? Bob?
Well, I think going into a debate with an earpiece is an impeachable offense, but that may just be me.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Stealing two elections, I think, is impeachable.
Yeah.
Trading Sammy Sosa.
Yeah, that's...
I'll leave it at that.
That's probably the worst one. Congressman Waters.
Well, first of all, let me just say thank you for the kind introduction, but you failed to mention my most important work. I'm the chair of the Out of Iraq Caucus of the Congress of the United
right.
States.
I'll accept. And, I stand corrected, okay. Or I sit corrected.
All right. And let me just say that I was a member of Congress. And I experienced the attempt by the opposite side of the aisle to impeach President Clinton. Mm-hmm. President Clinton's impeachment was attempted because of the affair, supposedly, with Monica Lewinsky. And if, in fact, they could bring together articles of impeachment against the President of the United States because of infidelity. Certainly, we must understand that that pales in comparison to what
yes.
This President has
yes.
done. Yes. To begin with, I never believed and I argued against that attempt for impeachment because I did not think it was an impeachable offense. I did not think it was high crimes and misdemeanors. But I understand very well that every subject that you have touched upon this evening certainly qualifies, in my estimation, for impeachment, that they are indeed high crimes and misdemeanors. And let me just say, when we talk about what has happened in this country following 9/11 and the fact that the president has fashioned this phony war on terrorism because people were frightened, because people were basically very, very upset and frightened by what happened in 9/11. They've been taken advantage of. And because of that, he has created this immoral war that we are spending billions of dollars on. And if nothing else but that, he should be impeached.
I hear you. Shayana, would you like to add to that?
Sure. Well, I guess I should add the lawyer's perspective. You know, even on the narrow the most narrow interpretation of the impeachment power, everything here is an impeachable offense. We try to lay the case out in our recent book, Articles of Impeachment of George W. Bush. But thank you. It's the last plug of the night. Thanks. But, you know, not every crime is necessarily an impeachable offense. It's always been thought that that a crime has to somehow threaten the structure of government, that either, you know, it should be, some sort of offense against the separation of powers or something that would subvert democracy. And everything that you've mentioned is right along those lines. And that's why, in fact, there are dead-on historical precedents for all of these things as impeachable offenses. So, for instance, with the wiretapping, the second article of impeachment against President Nixon talked about how he had used warrantless wiretapping and taken advantage of the intelligence agencies for his own personal gain for purposes, as it said, unrelated to national security. And I think we're going to see that when the truth about the wiretapping program comes out. We don't really have a lot of facts about it, but I suspect that it's not targeted at terrorists, that in fact it's something much more experimental along the lines of total information awareness, a kind of data mining program that is really aimed at listening in on telephone calls of everyone in the society. Then in terms of the Iraq War, you know, one of the
running out of time, so we want to just talk a little bit more about what's going on. And Mary, I had a question.
Oh, yes. Well, I just wanted to know, where does this go from here? Do we need to get a certain number of states to pass this kind of a resolution? What happens if California does get
that's a great question and something that, yeah, we hadn't mentioned. Couple things. One is that it doesn't take a certain number of states to do this. Once it's passed by a state legislature, the resolution goes directly to the U.S. Congress. And there's two options. One is that it would either go to the Judiciary Committee, which, as we know now, would just indefinitely table it. But the other scenario is that all you need is a single member of Congress to bring it to the floor. And if they do that and bring it to the floor, then it becomes a question of priority or privilege, and it goes sort of to the head of the class, to the front of the line, and there will be an actual floor vote regarding the resolution right there on the floor of Congress.
But in the worst case scenario, suppose no single member of Congress does that. Do we have any other options?
No, it would. I mean, at this point, it would just go to the Judiciary Committee that would, as we know, table it.
I think Zell Miller's going to do it.
No, I heard Lieberman and Miller were going to do a joint resolution. So that kind of brings up the question of, you know, I think there's a lot of people and a lot of very progressive people out there that think we shouldn't be wasting our time on impeachment and this whole discussion of impeachment. And I think strategically they're exactly wrong. I had a meeting with Dianne Feinstein a couple weeks ago, and, you know, she brought up that thing. Well, we don't have the House. We don't have the Senate. You know, it's a waste of our time to bring up impeachment. And I think from a strategic standpoint, that's exactly the opposite. The more we talk about impeachment, the more we educate the public, the more that it's just in our vernacular, the more comfortable the public becomes with the idea, and the more we keep in the front of their minds the crimes that this administration has committed. And if California brings an impeachment resolution, and Vermont brings an impeachment resolution, and Illinois brings one to the, you know, in other words, the media that's generated from this, I think, is extremely positive media for the Democrats. And I'm thoroughly convinced that the more we talk about impeachment, the more likely we are to take back the House and the Senate in November and actually be able to follow through then on these articles and getting rid of this regime. So I think every Democrat and inexcusably every progressive Democrat should be 100% on board with impeachment, because I think that is the way that we're going to win in November, is by bringing an opposition party back into the Democratic Party. We like to say we want to market a new game we invented called Pin the Balls on the Donkey. And so that's what we're here to do. We're here to start pinning some balls on the donkey and bring this to the fore. And I think that it really is the strategic move to make.
The other point to keep in mind is that the reason that the president is behaving in such an outrageous manner is that he is not, that he knows he can do that with impunity. And it's by pushing for people to talk about impeachment, we might be able to, you know, influence the behavior of some of the people who are in charge right now, because the Congress could change and they could end up in jail. If you don't talk about it, they're not going to care.
I just also want to add one more thing, and that is that, you know, we talk a lot about what the correct strategy is for the Democratic Party, but the reality is that impeachment I liken it to copyright law. You have an obligation. If you're given a tool to hold your leaders accountable and you don't do it, you're complicit in the crimes. It's really an ethical obligation for all of us as the people that are being subjected to this personal domestic terror, and all the people and all of the elected officials who we've put into office, to say this is wrong. And it really doesn't matter. There's an argument that, oh, well, people are still so burned from the Clinton impeachment. Well, it's a ridiculous comparison. It's a ridiculous comparison. The crimes that this government and this administration have committed are outrageous, and if we do not do anything about it, we're complicit in it. We're part of the problem.
Remind us just again, because we're running out of time, where people can get more information on what you're doing and why it matters.
If you're interested in the Progressive Caucus or joining or learning more what we're doing, then you can go to progressivecaucuscdp.org, Progressive Caucus, and then CDP for California Democratic Party.org. The other thing I would say is find out who your member is in the assembly. And we have 2 months to bring a vote to the floor of the California State Assembly on Paul Koretz's bill. And we need, I think right now we have 4 additional co-sponsors who've already signed on. But obviously we need that 50% plus one. Mm-hmm. And we are a Democratic-controlled assembly, and we can get those numbers, but it's going to take a real, you know, cohesive lobbying effort throughout the state to make this happen. And so people need to really make it a priority to make those calls. And believe me, it's not as hard as you think it is if you haven't done it before. Like I said, in the past year, you know, I've sat down with Howard Berman, and I just sat down with Dianne Feinstein, you know, a couple weeks ago. And, you know, they're there, and you just, you know, got to stick after them.
Let me just put one more thing. SpeakOutCA.org is Jackie Goldberg's site for California, and she's actually one of the co-sponsors of the bill of AGR 39, and there's going to be a lot of information on SpeakOutCA.org as well.
And the audio from this impeachment panel, this impeachment forum, will be made available at some point?
Yeah, it should be forthcoming. We actually will have both audio and video of the forum, and, you know, we'll start disseminating it everywhere. But I know one of the first places that it wants it is after downingstreet.org.
Well, we'll certainly be playing it here on killradio.org. Thank you so much for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
And keep up the good fight.
You too.
You've been listening to the Kill Radio Tuesday News. Be well. Be very, very well.